A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away. Random House Audio presents Star Wars, Yoda, Dark Rendezvous by Sean Stewart. Read for you by Jonathan Davis. The sun was setting on Coruscant. Shadows ran like black water, filling up the alleys first, then climbing steadily higher, a tide of darkness rising to drown the capital. Twilight's gloom spread over retail districts and med centers and crept like a dark stain up the walls of the Chancellor's residence as the sun slipped below the horizon. Soon, only the rooftops were gilded with the day's last yellow light. Then the shadows conquered them too, swarming up the pinnacles of the Senate building and the spires of the Jedi Temple. A ship settled like a dragonfly on the landing platform nearest to the temple, lights burning at its tail and wingtips. Chief Technician Boz Adel loved all the ships in his care, but he had a special affection for the sleek couriers. He ran a gloved hand along the metal flank of the Hirsch Kessel Seltaya class fast courier, Limit of Vision, that had just come home. Electrical sparking, meteorite parking, a couple of laser cannon burns, he murmured. Jedi Master Jay Marek clambered out of the cockpit. His face was gaunt, stitched with shrapnel cuts, and puckered by a bad burn that lay in a bar of charred flesh across his cheek. The chief technician regarded him gravely. You promised you'd bring my ship back without a scratch, Master Marek. Grim smile. I lied. I must speak to the Jedi Council at once. As many as can be found, anyway. The Clone Wars, like a mighty hand, had flung Jedi throughout the stars, leaving only a few senior Jedi Knights in the temple at any time. Yoda, of course, as Master of the Order and military advisor to the Chancellor, was nearly always on Coruscant. Tonight, only two others had joined him to hear Jay Marek's story. Jay Marek's close friend, Master Ilena Chan, nicknamed Iron Hand by the students. She taught hand-to-hand combat, and her specialty was joint locks. And Jedi Council member Mace Windu, who was too intimidating for nicknames. We were running recon in the Outer Rim. Jay said. Began to think there was something funny going on in the neighborhood of the Hydean Way. Little drab transports kept popping up, like a merman trail leading into and out of the Wayland region. I got a funny feeling about them. So I dressed up one of the clone transports in pirate's colors and sent it to intercept. Turned out that little commercial shuttle had legs in it like an Amoydian jackrabbit. Dropped down a burst of plasma fire and jumped to hyperspace in a heartbeat. Master Yoda's wrinkled brow rose.
In a Nerf's coat, this great dragon was.
Exactly. Master Jay Marek glanced down at his right hand, which was trembling. An ugly char mark was burned across his palm. A young Padawan, a red-haired girl of perhaps 14, came into the room with a pitcher of water and some glasses on a tray. Bowing, she placed them on a low table. So the Trade Federation was shipping something important into the Hydean Way. Jay continued. Why? Not new ordnance. We don't have any significant troop concentrations out there. And why the disguise?
There has to be something we aren't supposed to know about, Ilena said.
Mace Windu studied the lightsaber burns on Jay Marek's cheek. Or someone. Yoda tapped out a pattern on the council chamber floor with his cane.
One of these crates. Followed it, did you?
But you were caught, May said.
Jay's face tightened. I tracked them to a rendezvous on the June. Master Yoda stirred and shook his head. The others looked to him.
Strong in the dark side, the June is. Know you the stories?
They looked at him blankly.
A trial of being old is this. remembering which thing one has said into which young ears. But he knows. I remember we spoke of it when he was only a Padawan.
The other Jedi stared. Who knows? Master Chan asked. Yoda waved the question off with his stick.
It matters not. Master Marek, continue.
At first I remained sunside, hidden from my crate. But when it stayed dirtside for longer than just refueling, I had to risk following it to the surface. I made a soft landing many kilometers away. I kept my heat and IR signatures crushed down. I swear it.
He slowed to a stop.
It doesn't matter. She caught me.
She? Master Chan asked.
A sage Ventress.
A gasp came from the Padawan who had brought the water.
Little pitchers, big ears they have. Duties to attend to, have you not, Scout?
Not really, she said. We've finished dinner, and there's nothing urgent I have to do before tomorrow. I mean, I was intending to practice in the training room, but that could...
The girl flushed and stuttered to a halt under the masked gaze of the Jedi Masters.
Padawan Scout, Mace Windu said deliberately, I am surprised to hear you have this much free time, given the upcoming apprentice tournament. I hate to think you might be bored. Would you like me to find you something to do?
The girl gulped.
No, Master, not necessary. As you say, practice. I should...
She bowed and backed out of the room, sliding the door almost shut until they could see only one green eye.
But if there's anything else you need, don't hesitate to...
Scout?
Right.
And with a click, the door slid shut. Mace Windu shook his head.
The Force is weak in that one. I don't know what Shankar saw in her.
We'll never know now, Jay Marak said. Together they paused in remembrance of Shankar Kim, another Jedi fallen in the ring at Geonosis.
Frankly, Mei said, I was surprised she was ever chosen to be a Padawan.
To the agricultural corps she should be sent, think you?
Actually, yes, I do.
A note of sympathy entered Mace Windu's voice.
Wouldn't you see how hard she has to fight just to keep up with children years younger than she is? Perhaps it would be kinder to let her work at her own level.
Yoda cocked his head and looked curiously at him.
See her struggle, do I, as well. But if you make her stop, tell you it is kind, she will not.
Maybe not, Jay Marak said grimly. But the truth is we are at war. To send a Jedi into battle with a Padawan who cannot be trusted to hold her own is to needlessly risk two lives. Lives the Republic cannot afford to throw away.
The Force is not as strong in Scout as it should be, Aelina agreed. But I've had her in my classes for years. Her technique is good. She is smart and she is loyal. She tries.
There is no try,
Master Marek said, unconsciously letting his voice slip into the Yoda imitation for which a lifetime ago he had been famous among the young boys of the Jedi Temple.
There is only do.
The other three Jedi in the room glanced guiltily at Yoda. He snorted, but laugh lines crinkled around his eyes.
Thinking of students I am. Best then I should go to battle with him in whom the Force is strongest, With young Skywalker, think you?
He's not polished, Aelina said.
And too impulsive, Mace added.
Yoda stirred again with his stick.
Then best of all would be the strongest student, yes. Wisest, most learned in the ways of the Force.
He nodded.
Best of all, Dooku would be our great student.
Yoda's ears flexed, then drooped.
Our great failure.
The ancient master hobbled over to the tray and poured himself a glass of water.
Enough. The rest of your story, tell us, Master Marak.
Ventress found me, Jay said. We fought. I lost. She took me prisoner. She blindfolded me and bundled me into a speeder for a short ride, no more than an hour. Count Dooku was waiting at the end of it.
Ah, Mace Windu leaned forward.
So Dooku is on Vajoon.
You escaped from Dooku and Ventress alive, Aelina said.
A mirthless smile tugged on Jay Marok's burned cheek. Make no mistake, I am here because Dooku wanted me here. Ventress would have killed me if she could. She made that very plain. But Dooku wanted a messenger, one he could trust, one who would report here first and not to the Senate. He was very particular about that. I was to deliver my message to Master Yoda, and only in the temple, far from other ears.
And what was this urgent message? Mace Windu said.
He says he wants peace.
Peace? Master Chan spat out. Bioweapon slaughter innocents by the millions on Hanukkah, and he wants peace? The Republic is falling like burned logs into the fire, and he wants peace!
Dooku anticipated we might be, wary.
Jay Marok reached for a pocket under his cloak.
He would send me back, he said, with an offering and a question for Master Yoda. The offering was my life, but the question was this.
He drew his hand from his pocket and opened it. There, on his shaking palm, was a shell. A single, quite ordinary shell, such as a child might find on the seashore of 100 worlds.
63 standard years earlier. It is evening, and the sky is dark blue above the sprawling compound of the Jedi Temple. In the temple's walled gardens, the twilight sky is reflected in the ornamental pond. Yoda's most accomplished student is sitting on a rock by the pond's edge, looking into the water. In one hand, he holds a shell, running his thumb again and again over its bone-smooth surface. Before him, water skeeters dance on the surface of the water, light-footed. The apprentice's attention moves with them, dancing too on the surface of silence, skating on the endless deepness of the Force. He has always been light-footed. The Force dimples underneath his attention, but holds him up effortlessly. Only tonight, for some reason, he feels sad and strangely heavy, as if realizing for the first time how easy it would be to see his foot fall through into that deep power, to sink into dark depths there and drown. A glow light approaches, coming from the direction of the master's quarters. The presence is a familiar one, and the student can feel Yoda, his old mind warm and bright as that glow light, long before the old one's silhouette rounds the last bend, and the great master of the Jedi Order hobbles slowly up to join him. The grand master of the Jedi Order puts down his light and clambers awkwardly onto a rock. Yoda settles himself on the stone in a series of grunts and shifts, adjusting the skirts of his worn Jedi robes and letting his feet hang just over the surface of the pond.
Pensive are you, Dooku?
The student doesn't attempt to deny it.
No fear about this mission, have you, surely?
No, Master. Not about the mission, anyway.
Yoda gives the student a companionable prod with the end of his stick.
So ready to leave yesterday you were.
And last month, and last year, and the year before that. A rueful smile from Dooku lights and dies slowly away. But now that it's really going to happen... He looks around. I can't remember a time I didn't want to leave. To go out, to travel the stars, to see the world. And yet I have loved it here. This place has been my home. You have been my home.
And will be still.
Yoda gazes at the sweet-scented darkness of the gardens approvingly.
Always will there be a place for you here.
I suppose so. I hope so.
The student looks down at the shell in his hand. I found this on the bank, abandoned by a freshwater hermit crab.
They don't have homes of their own, you know. They keep outgrowing them.
I was thinking about that. How the Jedi found me on Sereno, with my mother and father, I suppose. I can't remember them now. Do you ever stop to think how strange that is? Every Jedi is a child his parents decided they could live without.
Yoda has a question he likes to ask.
What are we, think you, Dooku?
Every time the student tries a different answer.
We are a knot tied in the Force. Or, we are the agency of fate. Or,
We are each cells in the body of history. But tonight, watching the glowfly hiss and flicker in the night, a truer answer comes to him. In the end, what we are is alone. I guess even then I was like that hermit crab. The student says, too big for my parents' house. So you brought me here, and it's been years now that even the temple has seemed a tight fit for me. I guess. The young man pauses. I worry that once I am out in the big world, I will never be able to fit inside here again. Yoda nods.
Proud, are you? Not without reason.
I know.
Not without danger, either.
I know that, too. The student rubs again at the hermit crab shell and then drops it into the pond.
Bigger than the Jedi. Bigger than the Force, you cannot be.
But the Force is bigger than the Jedi, Master. The Force is not just these walls and teachings. It runs through all life, high and low, great and small, light. Awkwardly, the student stops.
And dark,
Yoda says.
Oh yes, young one. Think you I have never felt the touch of the dark? Know you what a soul so great as Yoda can make in hundreds of years?
Master?
Many mistakes!
Wheezing with laughter, the old teacher reaches out with his cane and pokes his student in the ribs.
To bed with you, thinker of deep thoughts!
Poke, poke.
Trust in yourself, you need not. Yoda, great and powerful Jedi Master, will trust for you. Is it enough?
It is too much, Master. I am afraid.
Good!
Yoda snorts.
Fear the dark side, you should. In the mighty is it mightiest. Many shells have we left for you, Dooku. As long as you can fit inside this one.
He says, wrapping his student's skin.
Tomorrow go you must into the darkness between the stars. But home always will this place be. If ever lost you are, look back into this garden.
Yoda hefts his glow light so shadows like water skeeters dart away from them.
A candle will I light for you to find your way home.
Sixty-three years later, Jay Marek had been sent to the infirmary, and Eileena Chan had returned to her room, making preparations for the Jedi Apprentice tournament. Mace Windu alone lingered with Yoda.
Dooku asks to come home,
Yoda said.
A trap, could this be?
Probably, Mace agreed.
Yoda sighed and studied the shell.
A question, he called it. Yes, such a question. But ignore it, we must. Do you agree?
Unexpectedly, Mace shook his head.
Dooku should be dead. I should have killed him on Geonosis. I could have stopped the whole war then, and still he is key. Could he come to parley in earnest? There is only a little chance. Could he come all the way back to us? Surely the chance is less than a little. But balance that chance, however small, against a million lives, and it's a chance we must take. So I think, Master.
Yoda grunted, glaring around at the temple.
Fair. All too wise you have become. Better before it was, when only Yoda was wise.
On the other side of the galaxy, the Order's most gifted apprentice reached out to tap a lightsaber with the toe of his boot. Count Dooku grimaced. The lightsaber was still attached to a hand. The hand was soot black and rimed with frost. It ended in a gory stump of frozen blood just above the wrist. Dooku was in his study, a place for reflection, and the severed hand hardly struck the contemplative note. Besides which, as hard as it had frozen in the bitter vacuum of space, it would be thawing out in a hurry now. If he wasn't careful, it would leave a stain on the tiles. Not a good thing. Even though one more bloodstain on the floor of Chateau Malraux would hardly be noticed. On the other side of Dooku's desk, a sage Ventress hefted a bag of foil insulation.
There wasn't much left of the ship, Master. The Force was strong,
and I hit the reactor chamber with my first shot. It took me several hours to find that, she said. It occurred to me a magnetic scan might turn up the lightsaber. Funny to think he was reaching for his weapon when his ship blew up. Instinct, I suppose.
He?
He, she, a Sage Ventress shrugged. It. With an expert force tug, Dooku brought the severed hand, still clutching the lightsaber, to hang in the air before him. Dooku ran one finger along the handle of the dead Jedi's weapon.
Jiang Li-Li, he murmured.
I make that 16, Ventress said. 17 it should have been, if you'd allowed me to kill that spy, Marok. Dooku turned to Ventress. Released from his attention, the gory hand and the handle it clutched dropped with a wet thump and clattered to the floor. The Count walked to the window of his study. When he was very young, Yoda had told him Bajun's tragic story, and for years he'd had it in mind as a good place to make a retreat. The planet was heavy with the dark side, which made the study of the Sith ways easier. And more practically, Vajoon's catastrophe, a plague of sudden madness that carried off most of the planet's population in a year, had left a great many nicely appointed manors empty for the taking. An old crab likes a comfortable shell, after all. And Chateau Malraux was very comfortable indeed. Beyond the study window it was raining, of course. The same acid drizzle that had nearly eaten through the roof before Dooku had arrived to set things in better repair.
The last time I saw Jiang, she must have been younger than you, even. A handsome young woman. The Council was sending her on her first diplomatic mission. To Savarkos, I think it was. She came to ask my advice. She had striking eyes, very gray and steady. I remember thinking she would do well.
Ventress picked up the bloody hand and tossed it into her foil bag. Great are the powers of the Sith, but you're not much of a fortune teller.
You think not?
Dooku turned to consider the dead Jedi's murderer. Ventress tied a knot on the foil bag and tossed it into the corner of the room.
If you ask me,
Ventress said, watching the bag hit with a wet thud,
that's not what winning looks like. You have a point, he said.
Ventress took a deep breath. Make me your apprentice.
It's not the time,
Dooku began, but Ventress cut him off. Have I served well?
Superbly, he admitted.
Then reward me. Make me your apprentice. Teach me the ways of the Sith.
Have I not taught you many secrets, a sage?
Scraps. Little devices, lesser arts, not nearly what you would if I were your apprentice, sworn in blood, I know. I am no fool, she said angrily.
It is a tricky business, this making of apprentices,
Dooku said.
The true Sith Lord must find a pupil in whom the Force runs strong.
16 Jedi dead is some testament to that, Ventress said.
Should have been
17, she added.
But do I really want to make you so strong?
The Count said softly.
We are such pleasant company now, while you know your place. But if I were to make you my apprentice, if I were to take you by the hand and lead you down below the black water that is the dark side, then either you would drown or you would grow far stronger, and neither option appeals to me. You burn so brightly now. I would hate to put you out.
Why should you? What harm is there in teaching me to help you better?
You would betray me.
He shrugged, cutting off her protests. You think I would intrigue against you?
Not at first. But a day would come when you would disagree with my decisions. When you would start to dream of how much better things would be without my liver-spotted hand held over you.
I disagree with your decisions right now, she said, about that Jedi who
should have been number 17, I know, Dooku smiled. I don't have your appetites. I can wait on my kills and use them better. And for now, you might disagree,
But you dare not disobey.
And here, with a small smile, he lifted just one finger. She blanched.
True,
she said. Dooku let his finger drop. He consulted a monitor.
Ah, our latest batch of guests is arriving. Loyal beings and true, for the Trade Federation cause and a 10% profit. Go meet them at the door. You always make such an impression on visitors.
Don't patronize me, a sage said coldly. Dooku looked around.
Or what?
Her face went pale. Dooku lifted that one finger, and this time he tapped it in the air, as if pushing a needle into a pincushion. Ventress crumpled to her knees.
Please,
she said.
Don't.
It doesn't feel very good, does it? Like sharp stones in your throat and chest.
Dooku made another little patting motion, and Ventress slammed to the tile floor.
It's the blood vessels I hate, Dooku said. The way they stretch inside, like balloons about to pop.
Ow! Please!
But worse than anything is the memories,
he said more softly still.
They crowd around like flies on meat. Every despicable thing, every petty vice, every little act of spite.
The Count's soft voice went dark and far away.
All the things you should have stopped but didn't, and nothing will ever be right again. And the things you've done, he whispered, by the pitiless stars, the things you've done.
The comm on Dooku's desk beeped. He shook his head like a man waking from a dream.
The Troxan delegation is at the door.
Ventress crawled to her feet. Her face was bruised and her cheeks were wet with tears. Both pretended not to notice.
Tell them I'll be right down,
Count Dooku said. Physically, the Count's age was rarely a handicap. Deft as he had become with the Force, he wore his 83 standard years better than most humans half his age. He was still in superb physical shape, senses keen, health undiminished by even the memory of a cold.
Only in this situation, stooped before the image of his master, did he feel his years.
Even via hologram, the flickering figure of Darth Sidious, hideous in blue and shadows, seemed to strip his false youth away, leaving his bones brittle, his joints worn thin and knotted with tension.
These are the envoys from Troxar, his master said.
They are considering surrender, Dooku said. They claim they have a resistance planned, ready to rise in insurrection when the clone troops withdraw.
No,
the flickering figure said sharply.
The war has already damaged the planet too much to make it worth saving. Its only value now is to chew up more troops and resources. Tell them they have to fight on. Promise them reinforcements. Tell them you will be deploying a new fleet of advanced droids to retake the whole system within a month if only they can hold on. Explain that such weapons will not be put in the hands of those who surrender.
And when the month passes, and no reinforcements arrive?
Help will come within another month at most. Promise them that, and make them believe it. I've shown you how.
I understand, Dooku said.
The Chateau Malraux was alive with eyes. The spectacular security system, installed by the 17th and last Viscount Malraux in the final months of his descent into madness, was one of the reasons Dooku had chosen the Chateau for his current base of operations. Optic recorder studs littered the mansion. The faux walls that had been built at enormous expense to riddle the chateau with secret passageways were pocked with spy holes. Microphones nested like spiders in dozens of drawers and linen closets, under every bed, taped to the roof by each of the 11 chimneys, and even glued on the base of a priceless bottle of Creme d'Infâme in the wine cellar. Someone hidden in the secret passage that ran over the study, for example, would have been able to watch the whole of the conversation between Dooku and a Sage Ventress through a peephole gimlet in the ceiling. If that person had been patient and waited until Ventress was well away, he or she would have seen the conference between Dooku and the hologramic apparition of Darth Sidious. And if the Watcher had waited a good while after Dooku left the room, he or she might have seen a section of shelving swing out unexpectedly, admitting a small, quick, evil creature, a Bajoon fox, its coat a brindled red and cream, with clever, prehensile hands instead of paws. After pausing a moment to sniff, it advanced warily into the room, speculatively at first, but almost immediately coming to the spot where Dooku had dropped Zhang Li Li's thawing severed hand. The hand had left a splotch. The fox sniffed, and its thin pink tongue showed between its lips.
"Not yet, my sweet."
A wheezing older woman limped through the secret door. She was dressed in dirty tatters of what had once been fine clothing. A pink ball gown gone black at its raveled hems, torn stockings, and the remains of what had once been a pair of gold lamé slippers.
"Wait a bit. Which mama wants to take a look-see?"
She lowered her bulk to the floor with a grunt and bent forward to peer at the stain. She gasped.
"Oh, precious," she whispered.
She leaned over to stare more intently at the splotch, and her eyes, small and hard as little black marbles, went wet and shiny.
"Oh,"
she said.
"Oh, such a day for Mama Sweetness, which she's been waiting such a long time for this,"
she whispered. She met the foxy eyes.
"Can't you see, Honeypot? Can't you smell it? The baby's coming home."
Count Dooku's meeting with the Troxan delegation went well. He made a cold kind of game of it, trying to see how little he could say, letting them do all the lying for him.
"There are new battle droids in production," he had remarked. That was all it took. They did the rest.
"Surely you'll be sending them to our quadrant,"
said the under-Palatine for Patriotic Liaisons.
"Really, we're key to the entire region,"
his assistant said.
"Of course you understand our need,"
another said.
"What other planets have fought so bravely for the cause?"
a fourth asked. Dooku moved rapidly to bring the meeting to a close and send them back to their slaughterhouse.
"Anything else?" he asked.
The delegates looked at one another.
"Actually, there was one other curious incident," said the under-Palatine. "As you may know, I was honored with the title of first diplomatic legatee and sent to the second round of talks with Republican negotiators. Nothing came of it, of course. The Senate has dropped even the pretense of debate now, and it's all threats and bluster these days."
He rippled his throat gills dismissively.
"At the end of the session, I was approached by Senator Amidala of Naboo, who asked me to deliver something to you."
With plump, nervous hands, he brought out a small box marked with the Jedi seal.
"Let me assure you, we have taken every precaution here, used the most advanced scanning techniques."
"We thought it might be a bomb,"
his assistant volunteered.
"Or a bug,"
another said.
"I still think it could be poisoned,"
a fourth said.
"Believe me when I say, your safety, of course, has been uppermost."
Dooku reached for the box. He found to his surprise that his hands were shaking. Odd. He had been almost as surprised as Ventress to see himself sparing the gaunt Jedi, Jay Marok. It had been a sudden whim, sending him back. A hook dropped for Yoda, as he had told Sidious afterward. A hook baited with the pink squirm of an old memory. He grabbed the box. He could feel Yoda's touch still lingering on the edges like a distant echo. Vividly, his mind went back to their last meeting on Geonosis. Swords drawn at last and finally equal. What a bittersweet moment. To see Yoda again and be a match, or more than a match for him, but not to be seen by him. No. They had gone their separate ways, and Yoda had newer Jedi to look after. Kenobi And worse yet, young Skywalker. Oh, yes. And wasn't everyone watching him? Even Darth Sidious, with a gleam in his eye, mentioned the boy as one strong in the Force. Just a little piece in a great game, his master had said. But a stab of jealousy had gone through Dooku when Sidious lingered over the name Skywalker. Yes, the Force is strong in him. Dooku rather thought that if he weren't so old and wise, he would probably hate this Anakin Skywalker. At least a little. He flipped back the clasps on the box. Strange that his hands should still be shaking so. The under-Palatine for the Bureau of Patriotic Defense looked over his shoulder.
We studied it exhaustively,
the diplomat said.
But all our experts agree it's nothing more than a plain wax candle.
On the top of a dilapidated skyrise in the temple district of Coruscant, two droids were playing Dejarik in the rain. They played extremely fast, moving each piece with blinding speed and precision. The two droids were built to an identical design, humanoid and tall, but there the resemblance ended, as if they had been twins separated at birth, one to live in a palace, while the other was doomed to be an outcast, scraping out a hard-scrabble existence in alleyways and gutters. The first droid was immaculately painted in an ornate livery, cream with crimson piping on his limbs. The blood and ivory colors repeated in a formal checker on his torso. The outcast droid had long since worn down to bare metal and never been repainted. His scratched face was gray, scuffed, as if from countless years of hard service. The droid sat at the edge of the roof. The scuffed one kept his visual receptors on the game, but his richly painted partner was constantly glancing up, looking out into the canyon between buildings, the busy slidewalks and the constant flow of flyers humming by, and farther off, the wide entrance and towering spire of the Jedi Temple. Of course, from this little terrace, it would be very difficult to observe much of anything happening at the temple. At such a distance, and with the rain falling too, it would have required the eyes of a Horansai to see a bedraggled figure come splashing up to the temple's front doors. To resolve that figure as an angry Troxan diplomat, carrying a curious-looking diplomatic pouch, would have taken something far beyond biological sight. Something on the order of the legendary Tau Zeiss telescopic sniper scope, etched transparisteel or neural implant reticle available on request, whose ability to hold its zero through a full range of adjustment from times 1 to times 100 had never been matched in the 400 standard years since the last TZ production line fell silent. The cream and crimson droid paused, its fingers motionless over the board. Several kilometers away, through a shifting curtain of rain, the Troxan diplomat was arguing with the young Jedi standing sentry duty at the temple doors. The packet changed hands.
What are you doing?
His drab gray partner asked. The painted droid's fingers bent down through the holographic warriors on the circular game board to move a piece.
Waiting,
he said. Jedi Master Max Leem lifted the hem of her robe and hurried through the Jedi Temple. The three shaggy brows above Master Leem's anxious eyes were tensely furrowed. Her jaw was long and narrow, even by grand standards. And when she was anxious, she had a tendency to grind her teeth, a ghostly holdover from the Grand's cud-chewing ruminant past. Master Leem was not normally of a nervous disposition. The Gran were a deeply social, community-oriented folk, and she had gladly given her life and service to the ideal of peacemaker. What she hated was that now, by slow but seemingly relentless degrees, she and the Jedi were turning, contemptibly, into soldiers. She had thought the Republic's civil war was the worst thing that could happen. Then came the slaughter on Geonosis, claiming the flower of a Jedi generation in a single day. On the way back to Coruscant, Master Yoda had spoken of healing and recovery. But for Max Leem, the last 30 months had been hard. Hard. For her, it was easier to face memories of the battle, than to cope with the terrible emptiness in the temple. 40 places set for dinner in a hall made to hold 100. The west block of the kitchen gardens left fallow. Food made in a hurry from ingredients bought in the city, and grave-eyed children of 12 and 14 suddenly monitoring comm transmissions, running courier routes, or researching battle plans. The children worried Leem the most. The temple, nearly empty of adults, felt like a school the teachers had abandoned. Suddenly orphaned Padawans, acolytes with too few teachers and too many responsibilities. Max Leem feared for them. As hard as Yoda and the other teachers tried to instill the ancient Jedi virtues, this generation could not help but be marked by violence. They were learning to feel with hearts made too old, too hard, too soon. It was one of these children, the gentle, graceful boy named Wee, whom she had taken as her Padawan, who had called her to the temple entrance. Max had arrived to find the boy remaining, as always, remarkably serene, while enduring a good deal of moist bluster from a pompous, overbearing, and furious Troxan diplomat, who could not believe he was to be stopped at the temple doors by a mere boy. This purple-faced being, with furiously vibrating gills, claimed to have a dispatch to be delivered to Master Yoda personally. Max came to Wee's rescue at once, using the force in the way that came most naturally to her, soothing the Troxan until his gills lay still, pink and moist, and seeing him off with the promise that she would personally deliver the package to Master Yoda. It was a high-security diplomatic correspondence pouch, of a type in common usage by many Trade Federation worlds. A mesh of woven metaceramic and computational monofilaments, the pouch was both a container and a computer, whose surface was its own display. Most of that surface was presently covered with a bristling array of letters, the same message repeated in Troxan and Basic.
Benevolence of Troxar, Bureau of Diplomatic Liaison, Incendiary Packet. Most confidential communication for Yoda, Grand Master of the Jedi Order, and Military Attaché to the Supreme Chancellor of the Galactic Senate. Warning, listed recipient only. This diplomatic pouch is actively enabled. Without positive identification, contents will plasmate on packet rupture.
The bag seethed in her hand. A brief topographic map of her fingerprints appeared on the packet's surface. Another part of the packet cleared to a small mirror surface, with the ideogram for I marked neatly above it. Master Leem blinked at her own reflection, then blinked again as the packet flashed briefly with light.
Gill pattern. Not applicable. Fingerprint identification. Negative. Retinal scan. Negative. Current bearer cannot be identified as the intended recipient of this Bureau of Diplomatic Liaison incendiary packet. Warning, contents will plasmate on packet rupture.
Max and her Padawan exchanged looks.
Better not drop it, the boy said, deadpan.
Max padded back into the temple, looking for Master Yoda. She found him in the Room of 1,000 Fountains. He was perched on a boulder of black limestone that jutted out of a small pond. She picked her way down to the edge of the pond, gently brushing aside long fronds of fern.
I thought I would find you here, Master.
Like the outdoor gardens better, do I?
I know, but they aren't nearly so close to the Jedi Council chamber as this room up here. I promised I would give this to you.
Yoda took the packet. Wrinkles climbed up his forehead and his ears twirled in surprise as the incendiary packet took its fingerprint scan.
Fingerprint identification. Positive.
The reflective mirror appeared on the packet's surface. Yoda stuck his tongue out at it and made a face.
Retinal scan. Inconclusive. Please present intended recipient's face or equivalent bodily communication interface to the reflective surface.
Machines,
Yoda grumbled, but he stared glumly into the packet.
Retinal scan. Positive. Current bearer has been identified as the intended recipient of this Bureau of Diplomatic Liaison incendiary packet. Destruct device disabled.
A micro-perforation appeared around the edges of the packet, and then the pouch peeled back, revealing the charred and battered handle of a Jedi lightsaber. Yoda's stubby green fingers curled lightly around it, and he sighed.
Master.
Jiang Lili. All that is left of her, this is.
Water dripped and whispered all around them in the garden.
Who sent it, Master?
Max wasn't sure Yoda had heard her question. For a long time he was silent, stroking the handle with his blunt old fingers.
Have you now a Padawan, Master Leem?
She nodded.
Your second.
Third. Rhys Ulrix was my first. She is fighting with the clone troops in Sallust. My second was Eremin Tarn,
she said reluctantly. Eremin had become a follower of Jisul, one of the more outspoken of the dissident Jedi, who believed the Republic had lost the moral authority to rule. Eremin had always resisted authority, including hers when she was his master, but he was fiercely principled. Intellectually, Max could understand his decision to withdraw from the Order, but it had torn a hole in her grand heart to see her very own Padawan, one she had taught from 13 years to the status of a full Jedi Knight, deliberately cut himself out of the Order.
This Padawan of yours, ready for the wide galaxy, is he?
We? No. And yes, she said. He is young. They are all so young. But if any of them are ready, he is. The Force is strong in him. Not so strong as in young Skywalker, but in the next level down. And between you and me, he carries it better than Anakin ever has. Such calm. Such serenity and poise. Truly, it is incredible in one so young.
A gong sounded the hour.
Ah, my class, Max said. I'm supposed to be teaching hyperspace navigation in Tower 3.
Yoda bugged out his eyes and made little shooing motions with his hands.
Then engage your hyperdrive, you must.
He watched, chuckling, as she ran from the chamber with the hem of her robe flapping excitedly around her hairy ankles and her boots thudding into the distance. When he was sure he was alone, he tapped the power switch on what had once been Jiang Lili's lightsaber. As he had suspected, the weapon had been modified. Instead of Jiang's blue blade humming to life, a hologram appeared. Count Dooku, 10 centimeters tall, as if standing on the lightsaber handle. He was sitting at an elegantly appointed desk. There was a window behind him, spattered with rain. Behind it, a cheerless gray sky. Before him on the desk lay the candle Yoda had sent.
We should talk,
Dooku said. He did not look at the holocam, as if, even across weeks of time and the endless black chasm of space, he was afraid to look his old master in the eye.
There is a cloud around me now. Around all of us. It's like a sickness. A fever in the blood. War everywhere. Cruelty. Killing. And summon my name. Blood like rain. I feel it all the time. The cries of the dying in the Force, beating in me like a vein about to burst.
He gathered himself, shrugged, went on.
I am tired, Master. So tired. And like any old man, as the end nears, I long to go home.
The tiny hologramic Dooku touched the candle Yoda had sent, turning it over in his old fingers.
I want to meet, but nobody outside the temple must know. I am always watched, and you are betrayed more profoundly than you guess, Master. Come to me. Jay will show you the way. We will talk. I promise nothing more. I cannot think you corrupt, but even you, Master, are snared beyond your understanding. I would be disappointed if you took my invitation as a tactical opportunity. If I see even the slightest sign of new forces deploying in the direction of the Hydean Way, I will abandon my current location and carry the war forward until droid battle cruisers burn the life out of Coruscant with a rain of plasma fire. Bring none but Jedi with you.
He gave a sad, crooked smile.
There are some things that should be kept inside the family.
Count Dooku of Sereno, warlord of a mighty army, among the richest beings in the galaxy, legendary swordmaster, former student, notorious traitor, lost son, flickered in front of Yoda's ancient eyes and went out. Yoda breathed deeply, trying to clear his mind in meditation, letting thoughts rise up before him. Water bubbled and seeped and trickled around Yoda. Time past and time present, liquid and elusive. And then, Qui-Gon was beside him. It would be wrong to say the dead Jedi came to Yoda. Truer would it be to say Qui-Gon had always been there, in the still point around which time wheels. Qui-Gon, waiting for Yoda to find his way down the untaken path and pass through the unopened door into the garden at the still heart of things. Yoda tapped the handle of Zhang Li Li's lightsaber.
You saw?
I did.
Cunning it is. If I move to see him, I must keep any Republic ships away from the Hydean Way. Deny the chance of peace utterly, must I, or else give him extra months unharried in his lair.
He is a fencer. Leverage, position, advantage. They are as natural to him as breathing.
My old student. Your old master, Qui-Gon. The truth he is telling?
He thinks he is lying.
Yoda's ears pricked up.
Hmm?
He thinks he is lying.
A slow smile began to light Yoda's round face.
Yes,
he murmured. A moment later, Yoda felt a vibration in the Force, a ripple rolling out from the student dormitories far below, like the faint sound of distant thunder. They didn't happen often, the true dreams. To be honest, we tried not to have them. They weren't like regular nightmares at all. He had plenty of those, too. Almost every night for the last year. Rambling, confused affairs. And in them, he was always failing. There was something he should have done, a class he was supposed to attend, a package he had meant to deliver. The true dreams were different. In those, he came unstuck in time. He would go to sleep on his dormitory cot and then wake up with a jerk in the future, as if he had fallen through a trapdoor and landed in his own body. Once, going to sleep when he was 8, he had woken to find himself 11 years old and building his first lightsaber. He worked on it for more than an hour before another boy entered the workshop and said, "Rad Tarn is dead." He tried to ask, "Who is Rad Tarn?" but heard his own voice say something quite different. Only then did he realize that he wasn't the wee building the lightsaber. He was just riding around in his head like a ghost. There was nothing, nothing worse than the horrible feeling of being buried alive in his own body. This time, he fell through the true dream and landed in a strange room, richly furnished. He was standing on a deep, soft rug embroidered with a tangled woodland pattern, thorn trees and thorn vines and venomous green moss. In the shadows, the glinting eyes of evil birds. The rug was spattered with blood. From the burning pain in his left arm and the slow, dull ache in his ribs, he guessed some of the blood was his. An ancient chrono, hanging in a metal case, crafted to look like a tangle of thorns and brambles, ticked dully in the corner of the room. The beats seemed slow and erratic, like the beating of a dying heart. There were at least two other people in the room. One was a bald woman with stripes painted on her skull and lips the color of fresh blood. He could smell the dark side on her like wood smoke, like something burning on a wet night. She scared him. The other was another Jedi apprentice, a red-haired girl named Scout. In waking life, she was a year older than we, bossy and loud, and had never paid much attention to him. In the dream, blood was dripping down her face from a cut on her scalp. She was staring at him. "Kiss her," the bold woman whispered, voice soft. Red teardrops crept from the girl's cuts, spilling by her mouth. Blood trickled in a red line down her throat to soak into the lapels of her tunic, just above the tops of her small breasts. "Kiss her, we." The dreaming we recoiled. The waking we wanted to kiss her. He was angry and sick and ashamed, but he wanted to. The bald woman grinned at him. "Welcome home," she said.
"We."
"Huh?"
"Wake up. We, wake up. It's me, Master Leem."
Her kind face was looming over him in the darkened dormitory.
"We felt a disturbance in the Force."
We blinked, gasping, trying to hold on to a now that still felt slippery as a bar of wet soap. The boys, who roomed in the dorm with him, were clustering around his bed.
"Were you having one of those dreams again?"
He thought of the girl, Scout, another Jedi apprentice, the trickle of blood along her throat, his guilty desire. Master Leem laid her six fingers on his hand.
"We?"
"It was nothing," he managed to croak. "Just a bad dream, that's all."
The white walls of the combat training chamber in the Jedi Temple had been newly cleaned, the white floor scrubbed, and new white mats laid down in preparation for the day's tournament. Nervous Jedi apprentices in sparkling white tunics prepared for the upcoming test, each according to personality. In her mind, Jedi apprentice Talisabeth in Wandung Esterhazy, nicknamed Scout, had them loosely grouped into four categories. Talkers, who clumped together, murmuring in low voices to distract themselves from the mounting tension. Warm-ups, who stretched their muscles or ligaments or pulse fibers, cracked various numbers of knuckles, and jogged or hopped or spun in place according to their species-specific physiological needs. Meditators, whose usual approach to sinking into the deeper truth of the Force, in Elizabeth's opinion, mostly involved keeping their eyes shut and assuming an affected expression of smug serenity. And prowlers. Scout was a prowler. Probably she should try a little meditation. Certainly her history suggested that getting too tense and excited was her worst problem. At the last tournament, she had gone out in the first round, losing to a 12-year-old boy she nearly always beat when they sparred. The defeat had been all the more humiliating because the boy was nursing a broken leg at the time and had been fighting in a brace. Anyone with the brains of a Sevarkosan prickle pig could figure she was out of chances to screw up. The fact was, the Force was weak in Elizabeth and Wandung Esterhazy. Oh, it was there all right. Strong enough to make an impression on Jedi talent scouts when she was a toddler. Although from something one of the masters once said, her family had been dirt poor, and her parents had begged the Jedi to take their daughter away from a life of grinding poverty. But somehow, as she grew in body, she had not grown in the ways of the Force. She did have a gift for anticipation. When she was sparring, for instance, and open to the Force, she would have flashes where she knew what opponents were going to do next, even before they knew it themselves. Her habit of scoping out a situation and reading it just a little faster than everyone else had earned her her nickname. But even that could fade out on her if she was flustered or upset. And as for the rest of the Jedi's traditional abilities with the Force, some days she could pull a glass off a counter with her mind and bring it to her hand, but more often it would slip on the way and smash on the floor, or explode as if squeezed, or go rocketing into the ceiling and fall in a shower of blue milk and splinters. You didn't have to be a Merlisai to catch the way the Jedi Masters talked together in low voices when she went by. You didn't have to be very smart, and Scout was smart, to notice how the other apprentices rolled their eyes at her or laughed, or worst of all, covered up for her mistakes. By the time she turned 13, she had all but given up hope of becoming a Jedi. When Master Yoda summoned her for a private talk in the Room of 1,000 Fountains, she had dragged up there with feet of permacrete, stomach churning, waiting to hear which branch of the agricultural corps they would assign her to. Worthy work, people always said. Honorable work. The hypocrisy of it made her furious. As if it weren't humiliating enough to fail at the only thing she'd ever wanted, they had to make it worse by pretending a hoe was the same as a lightsaber, and the mud of a potato field was as exciting as the dust of 100 planets beneath her feet. By the time she'd entered the room, her face had been slimy with tears, and there was a big wet splotch on the arm of her tunic where she kept wiping her sniveling nose. Master Yoda had looked at her, his wizened round face wrinkled with concern, and asked why she was weeping. Only Jedi have to strive for non-attachment, she'd said defiantly between snuffles. Farmers can cry all they want. Then he told her that Shankar Kim had asked that she be her new Padawan, and Talizabeth Nwandung Esterhazy, known as Scout to her friends, was left with what she later decided was the classic post-Yoda feeling. Breathtakingly stupid, heartbreakingly happy. 3 months later, Shankar Kim was dead. If her whole life hadn't been a struggle, Scout thought, that would have broken her. It was sheer will that kept her going. Sheer, bloody-minded, un-Jedi-like rage against the Trade Federation, against fate, against herself. She drove herself to the top of class after class, practiced joint locks on herself until her wrists were numb, went sleepless late into every night until star maps danced before her aching eyes. She trained harder than she had ever trained in her life. Astrocartography, unarmed combat, hyperdrive math, comm installation tech, lightsaber technique. She was slightly built, and her girl's body was agonizingly slow to gain muscle. But she worked out until the sweat ran in rivers down her back because she had to. She had to. She couldn't rely on the little cheat the rest of them had. The Force. Hey, Scout. Relax. The voice pulled Scout's attention back to the here and now. Combat chamber. Tournament day. It was Lena Missa calling, a good-natured Chagrian girl Scout's age. You're wound so tight I can hear you squeak when you walk. Thanks. I'll try, Scout said. Lena leaned in confidentially. Scout, don't worry. You're really good at combat. Just relax and use. She hesitated. Just trust your ability. Scout forced a smile. You're only being nice to me in case you end up in my bracket. Lena grinned back. You bet. My elbow is still tingling from that armbar you put on me last week. You wouldn't hurt a friend, right? There were 32 apprentices entered in the tournament. An apprentice had to be at least 10 years old to enter, with the majority of entrants in the 11 to 12-year-old range. Lena hadn't originally meant to enter, but they had needed one more to make an even number. The apprentices had been given the choice of a layered tournament or a sudden death elimination format, in which the first loss meant you were done. Scout had been strongly in favor of single eliminations. In the real world, she had argued, no enemy offered to go best 3 matches out of 5. Privately, she also felt the win-or-go-home format would play to her strengths. As good as she was at the physical elements of combat, the Force was weaker in her than in anyone else in the field. For her to do well, she would need to outthink her opponents. Trickery was usually more effective the first time you tried it. The fewer matches she had to fight, the better her chances of winning. Master Ironhand adjusted her tunic and picked her way to the center of the combat room. She announced that the first 2 rounds of the tournament would take place here, but when they were down to the round of 8, the remaining matches would be moved to less artificial environments. Students looked at one another, eyebrows raised. You wanted lifelike, Iron Hand said dryly. We decided you should get it. Now, to determine the first round matches. She consulted her datapad. Atresh Pekel and Gumbrak Hoyes. Atresh, a lithe black-skinned girl of 12, stepped forward, along with Gumbrak, a 13-year-old Mon Calamari boy. The Mon Calamari was stronger, but he had grown a lot in the last year and still had a tendency to stumble over his webbed feet. If Atresh used her quickness to keep dancing out of range until he tripped, she should be fine. Of course, Atresh wasn't a very calculating fighter. Like many of the more gifted apprentices, she tended to trust her own strengths instead of doing the kind of detailed preliminary observations that had earned Scout her nickname. The other kids used to laugh at her relentless calculation, but then they could afford to. Scout needed to do her homework. She had spent many hours over the last 6 weeks watching the other combatants spar, sometimes openly and sometimes in secret. She had a plan for tackling each of them, and, if not confident, she was at least prepared.
Flarp, Zerim, Master Chan called. Page, Gilp. Hororarib, Boofer. Chizik, and Wandung Esterhazy.
Scout's heart sank. Pax Chizik was an 11-year-old boy of enormous spirit and charm. As a fighter, he was strong in the force, smart, a little chunky, and without the best footwork, but with exceptionally quick wrists. He had a very fast parry, and most kids his age with that gift scored their points on the counterattack. But Pax was also imaginative on the attack, with the hand speed and creativity to launch complex and rather beautiful feint and cut sequences. The matches were open combat, no holds barred, with sparring to continue until one person surrendered by tapping the floor 3 times or took 3 burns from the training lightsabers, which were dialed to their lowest power settings. Even at low power, a cut from a training lightsaber was no joke. The touch of the blade was shockingly painful, a searing kiss that made one's muscles jerk and one's nerves howl, and it left a red welt that took days to heal. Scout knew, because every day for the last 3 weeks she had gone to a private spot in the unused kitchen gardens and touched herself on the flank or shoulder or leg with her own lightsaber at low power. Pain, as Master Ironhand was fond of pointing out, was extremely distracting. And Scout, knowing she was likely to get hit, was determined not to let the pain make her lose focus. The first matches began. Scout tried to pay attention, watching for any obvious weaknesses in case she met the winner in a later round. But the cramping anxiety in her stomach made it hard to focus, and after a couple of bouts, she joined the ranks of the meditators, thinking only of her breath, of silence, of the deep calm of blood washing through her body like a hidden tide. Her lips were dry, and there was a bitter metallic taste in her mouth. Get a grip, she told herself. Come on, Scout. Breathe in, breathe out. Breathe in, breathe out. Suddenly, it was time. Her palms were sweaty and her legs felt like jelly underneath her as she walked into the center of the chamber. Her lightsaber handle dangled from a loop on her tunic, bumping against a welt on her thigh. She went through the opening rituals, bowing to Master Chan and presenting her lightsaber for inspection. The master checked the power settings and handed it back to her. Pax bowed deeply in his turn, then presented his weapon with a theatrical flourish. As Ironhand looked it over, Pax shot a merry glance at Scout and tipped her the slightest wink. It was impossible not to smile. I'm glad it's you, he mouthed. They reclipped their weapons, parted, faced one another, and bowed. May the Force be with you, Pax said, and she knew he meant it. The murmur of conversation in the chamber died away as Iron Hand held up a small red handkerchief. Now that the horrible waiting was over, Scout was calmer. At the back of the room, a door opened, and she felt the presence of Master Yoda, glowing like a lamp. Master Chan let the red cloth slip between her fingers. Down it fell, fluttering, dipping, ever slower as time stretched out for Scout and Pax, until at last, gentle as a snowflake, the first edge touched the floor.
two lightsabers blazed to life. Scout ran in fast on a slant, testing his footwork. She got in with a bind that locked their blades together and let her use her size and weight to shove him hard. He stumbled backward, and she tried to drive home her advantage. He let his body go loose and tumbled backward, his blade slipping out of her bind and slashing up at her neck. She barely managed an awkward parry. It wrecked her balance, and she pitched forward over his tumbling body. She somersaulted over him, hit the floor with a shoulder roll, and bounced to her feet, whipping her lightsaber around in a high parry that caught his blade in a shower of sparks.
Oh boy, that was too close.
He attacked. Usually they were evenly matched, but Pax was clearly feeling the force today. His attack was long and fluid, a series of feints and cuts that came blindingly fast, each disguised as the other, so the real attacks melted in and out of the fake ones. Scout parried the first three with increasing difficulty, gave ground, felt herself becoming lost in the swirls of humming light, and finally broke back in full flight, using her speed to plane run away until she could escape the maze of humming green light he had almost trapped her in. Another pause. They stood five paces apart. Scout was breathing hard. Glancing down, she saw a char mark on her tunic where his blade had come too close. Pax looked down at his own saber, wide-eyed.
Did you recognize it, Scout? What? The Merlesi half-hitch. The knot you taught me. I was feeling for you with the Force, you know, the way they teach us, and suddenly it was like I was making the half-hitch around you, but all in light.
Murmurs throughout the room and scattered clapping. So much for trying to beat him straight up, Scout thought grimly. Time for Plan B. Pax looked up at her in wonder.
I've never done anything like that before,
he said, delighted. And he stepped toward her with renewed confidence, eager to dissolve once more into the calm fury of the Force. Scout dropped her lightsaber on the ground. Pax stopped, puzzled. Scout held out her hands, palm up, and bowed. Understanding dawned. Pax clipped his lightsaber to his belt and returned her bow respectfully.
Well fought, he said.
And then, taking a step nearer, he whispered,
This isn't going to mean they send you to the core, is it?
Scout tried to smile reassuringly and held out her hand to shake. Don't worry about me, she said soothingly as his hand entered hers.
I'll be.
In the middle of her sentence, as soon as his grasp was in hers, she flipped it over into a wrist lock. Pax blinked in surprise, then went quickly to his knees as Scout upped the pressure.
Oh, man, he breathed. You got me.
And with his other hand, he tapped three times on the floor. Scout instantly let him out of the wrist lock.
Sorry,
she said. Hannah Ding, an Arcanian apprentice Scout's age, shouldered past her to get to Pax.
That was ill-bred, she said.
At the best of times, Hannah had more than her share of Arcanian hauteur, and now a single glance with her milky white eyes made it clear that as little as she had ever expected from Scout, she had expected more than this. Master Ironhand approached Pax.
Are you all right, Chizik?
My pride is a little bruised, he said ruefully, shaking the tingles out of his right hand. But otherwise I'm fine.
Of course you'll disqualify in Wandong Esterhazy, Hannah said.
With all due respect, Scout ground out, forcing herself to meet Master Chan's eye. The conditions of the match were plainly laid out.
Combat to continue until one competitor surrenders or receives three cuts, Pax said. It's not Scout's fault I was dumb enough to forget the rules. She tricked me fair and square.
I see no reason to overturn the result of the match, Master Chan said,
and she walked back to the center of the room. Hannah Ding watched her go.
Well done, Scout. You proved you can beat up little boys as long as you're allowed to cheat.
She turned her milky eyes on Scout.
How proud you must be.
Somehow Scout wasn't surprised to find she would be sparring with Hannah in the second round. Realistically, Hannah was much the better fighter. Physically, Scout gave herself a very slight advantage in speed and strength, thanks to her extra training.
Technically, they were comparable. Hannah, possibly stronger with the lightsaber, while Scout was definitely ahead in the unarmed techniques that Master Ironhand taught. But when the Force was added into the equation, the contest wasn't even close.
"Good luck," Lena murmured, watching Hannah warm up.
Scout grunted. "On the bright side, at least I'll be fighting someone I really want to hit." It was time for their bout. Master Chan said, "Some of the apprentices were very vocal in lobbying for a tournament that was more like real life. In real life, we rarely get optimal combat conditions. One might find oneself attacked in null gravity, for instance, or by surprise, or by a droid or other creature whose physiology made certain techniques difficult or impossible. Of course, introducing a Gorax into the temple is not practical, but there are some things we can do. For instance, in real life, it is often dark." And the lights went out.